Malcolm Honlein is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. He is live in Jerusalem, which is always extra special for us, and joins us live via telephone here on a Friday morning Erev Shabbos. We call it the weekly update. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Thank you very much. It's good to be on the air, but it's good to be in Jerusalem.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Where it's a lot warmer.
Still a lot of snow on the ground, I hear. What is there, still like a foot and a half of snow?
Let me look out. I don't know where you're walking, but there ain't no snow around here.
I don't know. The last thing I remember is there was a lot of snow out there. Anyway.
Well, they told me it was specially ordered.
You're missing the big story of the week here. You're sitting out the whole Bridgegate scandal. I mean, you know.
Yes, oh no, I've seen it here. Yeah. Governor Christie's contribution to the entertainment this week.
Unbelievable, I'll tell you. Have you ever conducted such a long news conference in your life?
I don't remember a two-hour news conference.
Malcolm, one of the best
anything.
One of the best tweets I saw yesterday during the news conference is that he's doing a news conference filibuster, waiting for the next big story to hit.
That's a good line.
He's waiting for the news cycle to sort of push this thing away, but I guess that didn't happen. By the way, we should mention, because there are so many people in our listening audience and obviously throughout the Jewish community around the world concerned about the Jacoby boy from Massachusetts. He was found last
Thank
night.
God. Yes, he was found in Times Square, and they say that he was found okay.
Baruch Hashem.
I think everybody should stop the speculation and let the family and him deal with whatever.
100%. And also, excuse me. And I'm seriously not making a joke of this, obviously, but it's just if there's anything new, we'd love for you to tell us. You're in Israel now, obviously. I would assume that aside from telling us that the situation continues to deteriorate, there's not much else to say about Prime Minister Sharon at this point, right?
No, the hospital stopped putting out notices, I think, earlier this week, and then yesterday did put one out to say that his situation deteriorated, but family said he continues to fight like a lion, and appropriate for his name.
Yeah.
And it is truly remarkable the strength of his heart, the strength of his constitution to withstand, even with renal failure and other problems setting in, that he's able to sustain. The doctors, frankly, had thought that he would not have lasted this long.
Well, one thing that all of us, just as spectators, and obviously you as somebody who's been so close to the situation has always known, and that is that he's a fighter. I mean, this is something that you could attest to in terms of his personality, right?
Absolutely. He was very determined, and when he set his mind to something, he was hard to deter him. And he, as you saw throughout his career, even on some very controversial decisions.
Malcolm, you know what happened here last week, this brutal murder of Menachem Stark in Brooklyn, and obviously it's not my position to speculate about anything other than extend our condolences to the family, and again, just we find it so hard to believe how brutal a murder it was, whatever the circumstances were that were involved. You know that one of the key stories in the aftermath of what happened is the New York Post coverage of the entire episode, and I know it's not usually yours or my a situation to go ahead and start criticizing other members of the media, but so many people are so curious about what you thought about their coverage and if the outcry to the degree that it was justified.
Well, I think that the cover and some of the content of the articles that appeared was really outrageous, but not just on the part of the Post. I think the fact that even people from our community jump into the speculation about any business dealings, anything that they can, without knowing anything, without having any background on him. The word is that he was very charitable, big Balhassid, that he did many good things. And frankly, at this point, that's all that people should be discussing and thinking about his family and the suffering they're going through. I don't understand why people find this value on all these websites and speculating and people getting so involved. They cared about it. We have to look at the lesson about security in our communities, about cameras. Those are the things that we have to focus on, and of course, focus on his family and their situation. But the Post headline, I think, really went far beyond what is acceptable. And I don't know in other comparable situations they would do the same. It seems that Hasidim people with the beards and the yarmulkes, let alone the picture with the shtreimel, you know, is exotic, so it makes it more interesting. But to portray a guy like that when they have no facts yet, we have no information, I think was that the outrage about it was justified generally.
Well said, and I'm glad I brought it up. All right, you're in Israel, and it just seems that the pressure, and now one has to start to speculate whether now we're getting into this whole arena of presidential legacy. You know, is this now the intention? Because the intensity with which the Kerry meetings and the frequency of the meetings and just how much this Middle East peace process, which seems to not really be much of a process at all, continues to be in the news, is at an unprecedented level even for this administration. You're in Israel. We know that when you're there, you obviously speak to people who are really in the know. What can you tell us about the process that's going on right now and why John Kerry continues to put this type of pressure on Israel?
Well, he is coming back again. I think this was his 10th visit. The last one is this will be his 11th visit upcoming. He has expressed his commitment to this process and certainly demonstrated it. There are many people who talk to me, ministers. I've met with many of the leaders here, talk about the nature of the negotiations and the personal relationships and speculate about the relationship with Obama. I do not think that the President Obama is involved in these negotiations. I think this is Senator Kerry, Secretary Kerry, former Senator Kerry. And that he is very committed, whether because of his perception of war, whether he wants to have this crowning achievement, all that speculation aside, there is in the works, not an agreement, but a framework which will be the basis for negotiations. The Palestinians are insisting on certain things being in there. Number one, something not being in there is recognition of the Jewish state by them, which he says he will not do. He insists on the right of return being mentioned. He insists on, which will never happen, Israel will not recognize it. And then there were rumors about proposals of 60,000, 80,000 Palestinians being allowed into Israel based upon what happened at Camp David in 2000 with President Clinton, where that proposal was put forward. Then, so right of return is something for Israel that is an absolute red line. And as somebody said, what will they do if 3 million Palestinian refugees come to the West Bank? Forget about Israel. They can't accommodate them. What are they going to do with them? So the whole issue of whether Palestinians get resettled where they are, or where they go, is a very serious issue. Let me just finish because this is it's really a serious matter in terms of some of the polling and some of the attitudes. Because this process is moving forward, as you said, and it's not going to stop right now. From all that I see, it's going to go. And Jerusalem is now on the table as well. There's got to be something on Jerusalem. And obviously, for Israel, this is extremely sensitive and hopefully will be dealt with with that seriousness. The question of the 67 borders and land swaps, and that the Palestinians come out and say, we don't want to be swapped, although a third of the Palestinians say they favor being annexed to a Palestinian state or a Palestinian entity. So this framework agreement from which each side can have expressed differences, but will outline certain directions, let's say, and then the negotiations will be to fill in the infrastructure that is outlined in the framework agreement.
Is it possible that he, in fact, told representatives of the PA, if you simply recognize Israel, we can have 50,000 of your people come right back to Israel in an instant? Was it that?
Everything is possible, and it may not be that formula. It could be something else where because Kerry has been pressing Obama on, Kerry has been pressing Abbas about the issue of a Jewish state. Again, I wanted to say that I don't believe President Obama is directly involved. I guess I assume that Secretary Kerry reports to him regularly, but this is really the secretary driving a process, coming back there, over and over again, and doing so within the context also of all that's going on in the world. And people are saying, why is he focusing on this when the Abbas will not even lessen the incitement? I mean, we've seen all the reports over the last couple of weeks building on what we've talked about on air and others have for a long time, and that is there's a constant diet in every media, church, and mosques, in government pronouncements, honoring the, he himself joined in honoring the martyrs, quote, who were released by Israel, meaning terrorist killers, that he greeted them and had staged this huge welcome for them and extolling, you know, these people who killed innocents. So the question that really being asked, and I heard it from several people who are key in other countries, asking why not? And if you look at the region, Iraq today is heading towards a civil war. You see the bombings and see the increasing Al Qaeda presence and the Iranian influence.
Right.
Syria is certainly going to have a hard time moving to and towards a negotiated settlement. We see now even the Geneva Conference is hampered and in question. And many of the opposition groups are saying they won't go, and they're in disarray. Then you have the situation in Iran. You look at Afghanistan. I mean, take each situation,
right.
Yemen.
Understood. But just get back to my original point for a moment. And I understand you're saying that he's not involved and not, you know, participating on a daily basis in this. But just like we saw with a lot of prior presidents, and you and I could sit and list all of them and analyze exactly how they wanted their legacy to come through some type of Middle East peace process. Would you think, or would you tend not to think at this point, that Obama is focused on the Middle East peace process being part of his presidential legacy?
That the president is focused on?
Yes.
It?
Is this important to him? Is Kerry?
Well,
Kerry
got a Nobel Prize, and he has to now earn it. And frankly, you don't get it for most other places in the world. You get it, it seems, only over the Middle East, and a number of people have already. So I'm sure that the president would like to see a resolution. It's something that came out of, he invested a lot in his first term. When he went to Cairo, he went to Turkey. Both of those situations obviously are not what he would have envisaged. You have Erdogan, I mean, with the collapse of this great scandal in Turkey, which we'll talk about, and certainly the situation in Egypt, everyone knows. So the president, but what I meant was the president's personal engagement.
Yeah, I understand.
If this process takes off, you will see far greater involvement on the part of the
right. I'm just trying to understand it. Is all the shuttling back and forth because of the Obama legacy? I mean, Kerry is approaching this, especially, remember, he has a relatively uncooperative PA, even compared to the way they used to be. So is the constant shuttling and his desire to keep this in the headlines, is it an Obama thing? Is it a Kerry thing? That's all I'm asking. And I
try to answer it that it is to a degree both. It is Kerry who is running this process and who makes decisions when to come back and when not to come back. As I said, I'm sure, though I don't know of any direct meetings, but I'm sure that they consult. But obviously, the president, it's done during his administration,
right.
And the outcome of it impacts his legacy.
Do you agree that
far more impacts Kerry's legacy?
Do you agree that the PA at least gave the impression of more cooperation in this process a couple of years ago?
From people I spoke to today who are close to the process, say that he's actually been more cooperative lately, although his public statements have been much tougher. We see the outreach by Hamas to the Palestinian Authority now, talking about reconciliation because they're under tremendous pressure from the Egyptians and, you know, have had to pull back a bit on their own position and therefore reach out each time when it's convenient to do so. So this, anything beyond that is pure speculation.
It's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listeners-sponsored WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, Rockland County at 91.9 on the FM dial, and around the world on the web, jmn.org. Malcolm Homeline is in Israel. It's not like he landed this morning. He's been there for a few days already, so he's got plenty of conversations and meetings already under his belt for this week, so we're trying to get as much information as possible from Malcolm about what he's heard in Israel, both from the government officials he speaks to and, of course, from the street as well. By the way, I got to get back to the housing announcement, which I will in a minute, but you mentioned Erdogan. I read the Time magazine article. I don't know. It seems like no one is speculating that. I understand that the scandal there is a threat to him, but it doesn't seem like anyone's predicting that it's gonna cause his ouster. Do you believe that he actually could be replaced in Turkey at this point?
No, I don't believe that this is yet. But I do think it leads to undermining further his position, and they're facing an election in a year. And he wants to run for president, and he would like, even getting a third term. But it affects him politically. It affects his standing in the country. He's put in prison a lot of the generals.
Right.
At some point, he's going to have to let them out. And we have to look at the nature of this, of what the specific issue right now, but it's only one of several. And his behavior often has been bizarre, and you have the demonstrations inside Iran, inside the Turkey, sure. And Turkey sending some of the refugees from Syria into Bulgaria and other countries. I mean, he plays a nefarious role throughout the region. And not unlike Iran, both of them are attempting to extend their influence, one the Persian Empire, one the Ottoman Empire, and to reassert that. And he wants to be a regional player. He doesn't want to be a local player. And that part of his anti-Israel stance is because of that. So this is an issue where you had a guy named Zanjani who was recently arrested by Iran. And it involved huge amounts of money, perhaps more than $100 billion. And questions are raised whether how much the United States knew, when they knew it, why didn't they stop it earlier? And it said that Iran had $2 billion in Zanjani's hands, meaning that money, and they would buy, you trade this money from Turkey, gold, for money in Iran. And this money came from often oil sales done in third countries where they would change boats in midstream so it wouldn't be clear that the oil was coming from Iran. Then the money would be sent back. It had to be done in clandestine ways as well. And we're told that the oil changes took place, literally around the globe as part of this conspiracy. So one day there'll be a great meeting, a great movie made of all of this stuff. But it's really oil extracted in Iran being sold to third countries, the revenues transferred to Iran in cash or gold, and because the system is illegal, the transactions in third countries involve bribery and blackmail. So there's a whole network of crime and criminal elements involved in this.
You know, you mentioned his attitude toward Israel, and in order to win friends, he's got to be against Israel. There are, and I don't expect you to go into details about this, but there are clandestine meetings that are constantly going on between, I don't want to say representatives of Bibi, but let's say, people who are encouraged by Israel to meet with countries and find out what their position is vis-a-vis Iran. Let's put it that way. And I think that at this point, and I think you're seeing this with Saudi Arabia and other countries, they've got to choose what side they're on. Is he making a calculated error at this point in terms of his own future, Erdogan, by not choosing the Israel side and instead choosing the other side?
He won't think so. He's moving the country more and more in an Islamist direction. He sees himself in competition with Iran for regional significance, and he knows that you appeal to the Muslim street, to the Arab street, by being anti-Israel and by engaging in the incitement and doing all these public things that he has done against Israel.
Right.
So, it is all part of this. And they look at the other developments. When I mentioned about Iraq, when we talk about the Hezbollah in Iraq, you talk about the clashes that are taking place where Al-Qaeda now is building up its forces in Iraq, and you have Sunni Shiite clashes taking place, and it's not only the transfer of stuff through Iraq to Syria, and in the Anbar province, the fighting is taking place over control, and it keeps switching back and forth, and you have Jabhat al-Nusra and other groups now competing and collaborating for power in Syria, in Iraq, and countries like Egypt and Saudi Arabia and others have to look at this with great concern. And the Al-Qaeda suffered setbacks in Syria, but is winning victories in Iraq. It's a very complex situation, and everybody knows that they're facing serious challenges that could affect each country. The Kurds are organizing, it seems, more and more effectively. What makes this story with Turkey most disturbing is, number one, when the United States knew and did they act on it quickly enough? Two, many other countries are involved. You know that Iran has set up, it's believed, 150 front companies just in this country of Georgia, and that the Iran Revolutionary Guard now controls about 50% of the economy of Iran.
Wow.
And it's increasing. That's exactly right. Wow. And then you people, you know, look at each thing in isolation rather than trying to plug each of these pieces of the puzzle together. The threats by Iran about increasing the centrifuges, because they see America weak, they see the West weak, so they will make a speech about 60% enrichment because they want leverage against the new legislation. By the way, more than half of the Senate has now signed on to the Senator Menendez, Kirk, Schumer, et cetera, bill. 53 members of the Senate, and they want to get it up to a veto-proof majority.
What, to kill the November 24th agreement?
That would add sanctions if they fail to live up to the commitments they made. And it goes into effect in 6 months, but the administration is opposing it. The members of Congress are saying, look, what got Iran to the table was the sanctions.
Right.
We have to show them that there are going to be more sanctions and more serious consequences if they fail.
Does
they have no intention, I believe, of really going all the way on towards it. And they said they will not take away the enrichment that they
But from the can you go back category, does the U.S. have the power to destroy this November 24th agreement or not? I'm just curious if they even have the
yes.
They do. They have the authority to do
it's
that.
Not an, it's not an agreement.
I know.
And the Iranians say, by the way, that they can walk away from it.
The interim
they
agreement.
They say it's an understanding.
Right.
It's not. They changed the language. Right. That they refer
so when
to.
Will it become obvious? It's now January. At what point will it just become obvious that the U.S. has no choice but to say, okay, it's obvious the Iranians have no desire to adhere to this?
Well, Iran's continued involvement in terrorism in the region, Iran's negotiators continue to obfuscate, as they did this week again in the talks, and lying and introducing the idea that, you know, all their R&D and stuff was not stopped, the research and development. So they are improving the centrifuges. They're
right.
Already talking about a third generation, not just the second generation, which can enrich much quicker than what they have.
And mainstream news sources are reporting this. It's not like it's an obscure story. I mean, it's known.
Right. And then you see, you know, their offshoots like Hezbollah with these new, with the increased numbers of the Yarmouk missiles, which they get through Russia and elsewhere. So we're dealing with a situation where Iran has gotten some of the benefits already from the proposed deal, i.e. the increase in the export of oil, the rial, their currency, has bounced back, the stock market has gone up considerably, and at the same time, they have not given one thing.
Right.
They have not dismantled one centrifuge. They have not cut back anything. They're continuing to enrich as before, and they say that the base against which they will be measured after the six-month negotiations doesn't start until the implementation agreement. So right now they're enriching more and more into their stockpile. That will be the base in 6 months, not what they had when the deal was signed.
All right. So will the United States take action, especially now that you tell me they have the authority to do so? Will they take action to completely derail this process, or just like we see with sanctions and everything else that Iran continues to get away with, it'll just keep, you know, dragging on and dragging on as the United States continues to fool itself into thinking that Iran is going to comply?
Well, why wouldn't they if they see that they can get all the benefits? They're starting to get the benefits, that their psychology in the country is better, the psychological barriers regarding sanctions have been shattered by the deals.
I'm not asking from the Iran side.
There's an oil conference taking place, an energy conference. You have 50 foreign oil companies from 20 countries coming to attend it.
But I'm not asking from the Iranian side. I understand their position. I'm wondering when the U.S. is going to wake up already.
Well, the United States is saying, look, we're testing it. We can reimpose all the sanctions that we had. Anything that will be lifted can be put back. And that to date, they have not removed any of the sanctions yet officially. But that's why I keep stressing about the barriers that have been broken, because it's not really because anybody has changed the laws here in the United States or the application of the law. It's because the anticipation of it has already led. The Italians are doing a lot, the Germans, the British rushing there, talking about doing business, especially in oil and other sectors. So the United States, you know, says that they look at this realistically, that they have a clear picture of what Iran is up to, and that they're giving, that they're testing them. And the United States was very tough on them about the new centrifuges and about what they do, especially with certain specific incidents. We won't go through all of it. But, you know, the time we will see very soon. This is not a long-term issue.
Yeah, the unfortunate part is the U.S. often makes these long-term issues, and it just keeps going longer and longer term.
And we have to show how tough that we're going to be tough with this issue, that the Europeans and everybody else will follow what the United States does. So this legislation in Congress should be supported as a message to the Iranians that we mean it and that you will have additional consequences. And if you think that the relief you have now gains you some with your people, it'll be worse than it was before, because we're going to have new sanctions, tougher sanctions, more enforcement. We should put the aircraft carrier back that we took out. We should take stands that send clear, unambiguous messages. The message we sent with Syria when we didn't carry it out, the messages we're sending elsewhere. And the idea that we only put pressure on our friends, that Israel becomes the target of pressure, then other countries that want to be pro-United States tell us that they feel that they're the ones under the gun, and enemy states like Iran and sometimes hostile states like Turkey aren't held to the same standard.
Yeah, no question about that. All right, back to the construction announcement. There's always a big issue, and always one that we want to get. You know, I know that you always tell us that these are construction permit announcements, nothing, you know, concrete yet, so to speak. But what's interesting is the timing. All these announcements get postponed for a reason. Kerry's in the country. There's a certain negotiation, prisoner release, whatever the reason is. And it seems that when it's eventually announced, it's still bad timing. Like, there's no reason to postpone these announcements anymore, because no matter when it's announced, it always seems to be an inappropriate time for Israel. In this case, they announced plans to build 1,400 new homes in the quote-unquote West Bank and East Jerusalem. Even though it was no surprise, the announcement's likely to anger the Palestinians. It could cast a shadow on the U.S.-led peace efforts. I remind you, Malcolm, this is not illegal on Israel's part, but Kerry often recommends restraint when it comes to this area of new construction. What could you tell us about this announcement?
Wow. it is, as you said, it is a preliminary announcement. It was held off, I think, till now. It is not the start of construction. It's for tenders, you know, for people to submit proposals or bids for these houses. And the history, as you rightly cited, I don't know, you know, sometimes people complain about the timing. I think there are legitimate gripes in saying, you know, that we refocus the attention each time on the settlements by doing this. I think that's a legitimate commentary and something that could be examined. But on the other hand, it's a normal governmental function. This is not something that is extraordinary. It is very sensitive, but it is a normal government function to do this. And the cabinet has to approve it ultimately, I think, when the expansion and the new building. And it's, you know, to stop it is unnatural, to say that there can't be any growth, especially when you have the Palestinians building in very large numbers.
What do you think of Naftali Bennett's announcement that he's really ready to pull his party out if there is any type of Judea and Samaria included in the deal?
Say that again?
If Judea or Samaria are included in the deal that Kerry's arranging right now, Naftali Bennett says he's ready to pull his party out of the government. No surprise there, right?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I didn't hear the first part. Yes, there's no surprise there. I met with Naftali Bennett. I think he is serious about it. But I think those things are going to be far off. I don't think that the negotiations are going to come very quickly, and that the framework agreement won't go into that kind of granular detail where we will talk about the disposal or disposition in terms of any specific territorial area, but will deal more in principles that the sides will then be able to say they're for or they're against whatever their position is.
By the way, we saw photos of you meeting with Torah giants in Israel. Obviously, I'm sure the army issue is one that comes up. But do the political issues come up? Do you discuss the Kerry shuttle diplomacy with the Torah giants in Israel as well? Are they interested in that section of the news?
100%. I did meet, had the privilege to meet, which I do whenever I can on a visit, if I have some time to visit some of the great Torah leaders and sages of our time, just as I meet with all the political leadership and others, because you know every sector of society contributes and is an important part.
Now so it's not just army. It's not just army. Peace process is also discussed.
Absolutely, and they some of them have stories. They ask a lot of questions. They want to know about things happening in the United States as well. They, you know, they have broad interest and they, you know, assimilate the information. And they don't ask me to pass on any shyla, so I have no problem in discussing the issues.
You're in Israel, and it seems that we sometimes get limited stories about what's happening in Gaza. Often, unfortunately, when it's a big explosion or a lot of mortar attacks, then we hear about it. But when you're there, obviously, you hear a lot more details. What can you tell us about the Gaza border right now? Is there still mortar fire being shattered on Israel?
Yes, this week there were several incidents, but one in which I think altogether there were 7 mortars fired. It was Hamas this time, and the IDF, the IAF, the Israel Air Force, actually responded very effectively. Israel is on higher alert along the Gaza border in order to assure that there are no violations, and you have defense and other protections. But, you know, Gaza is going through transformations of its own, given the cutoff from by Egypt of the flow of money. Today, it's Israel that feeds Gaza.
Right.
And oil, energy, water, et cetera, comes from Israel, and let alone the questions of medical treatment that we've discussed in the past. So the situation in Gaza is really unclear now with the outreach that I mentioned by Gaza back to Hamas. They don't want to be to the Palestinian Authority. A, they never want to be left out. We know that Iran is giving them more money again, which is, again, an outcome of the somewhat changed economic circumstances. The and of course, the Kerry peace process talks are always an incentive for Palestinians to ratchet up the any exchanges that take place directly between the PA and Israel.
One other thing I wanted to mention before we wrap up, and that is that, again, we read about Russian-Iranian business dealings. As long as there continues to be a good business deal, Russia will continue to do business with Iran no matter what the U.S. thinks about it, right?
They'll sell anything to anybody. They're making a lot of money now on the sale of these advanced missiles that are ending up with Hezbollah, and that Israel has taken out several times. We know in May they followed up even more advanced and more accurate radio-equipped Yahoo missiles. They have a range of about 180 miles, and they fly close to the sea and at a very high speed, 2 times the speed of light. And that they do that to evade the radar. And they're usually armed with armor piercing or high explosive warheads. So they are getting from Russia, which is trying to take advantage of America's absence or any tensions between the United States and countries in the region. And these things could have long-term consequences. We should not think that this is immediate, each of these issues. When you think of the refugees from Syria, 8 million people, more than half of them internal refugees, but many others, millions of people now in Jordan, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Egypt, in Turkey, and going around the world. Now, the United States is debating whether they should take in some group of them. So we also have the problem of what's going to happen to the 20,000 jihadists who are in Syria today and fighting. What happens when they leave and they want to go back? And if you notice, the numbers keep going up.
Yeah.
And they will be targeted. Will they turn against Israel? Will they turn against other countries in the region? And what the Kurds are in terms of developing their own independence and broadening the entity that exists, the Kurdish entity that exists in Iran today. And each of these things, and what happens in Gaza, when they fire mortars, and when Israel retaliates, and now that they will use that as an excuse to go to the international court or go against Israel to the United Nations, and that each of these things ratchets up the stakes that in the region. And one missile can actually hit then a civilian, a kindergarten, God forbid, or at some place where we have multiple casualties, And that will lead again to some explosion because Israel can't tolerate. No country should be forced to tolerate these kind of incursions.
Unbelievable what's going on. Well, enjoy Shabbat in Jerusalem. Next week you're in Yerushalayim or you're back here?
Next week, God willing, I'll be coming back overnight, so I'll be there. This week I'll be in Greece and Cyprus to get more information for the show. I think we can. One thing that we should note is that tourism for 2013 was an all-time high, which I think is really, really good information. Also, new discoveries all the time of things, including these garment remnants that had tchelas on it. And it's been checked and trained and checked to go back to what we know was a tchelas used in the Beis HaMikdash from a snail that developed from a snail that is indigenous to this region. And, you know, these stories unfortunately get knocked off the front page. But one story that I think people should look at, and that is that Mein Kampf is the biggest selling book in the political, et cetera, area on Amazon and other things. And there's a real resurgence of interest, and people are reading and buying. And the question is why?
Right.
Is it some sort of purient interest? Is it because it reflects, you know, people are looking to it for answers, or is it just, you know, a historical interest? But the fact that there's been this big spike in the sale of Mein Kampf in America, as we've seen already in Europe, should worry people.
Very important message. Malcolm, enjoy Jerusalem, and thank you so much. Malcolm Holon is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, joins us Friday mornings here with the weekly update at JM in the AM.